Dark Imperium by Guy Haley, read by John Banks. Part 1. The Death of a Primarch. 10,000 years ago. Chapter 1. Thessala. The void is impossible for the human mind to encompass. Within the galaxy mankind calls home, there are 300 billion stars. Around these revolve hundreds of billions of worlds, and the spaces between are crowded by a diversity of objects which defy enumeration. Mankind's galaxy is but one of trillions of galaxies in a universe of unguessable size. The distances between even proximate astronomical bodies are inconceivable to creatures evolved to walk the warmer regions of a single small world. This is why the void cannot be understood, not by men nor by their machines. The Magi of Mars insist on their understanding, but their apprehension can only ever be an abstraction, dead numbers modelled by dead flesh cogitators. No matter how brutally expanded their minds, men cannot comprehend the majesty of the void. And when one considers the warp, that nightmare realm skulking behind that of touch, sound, and sight, well, any being who claims understanding of that is either deluded or insane, and is in both cases dangerous. Among the higher races, there are those better equipped to grasp their own limitations. They understand that the cosmos is ultimately unknowable. They accept their lack of insight. By comparison, the creatures of Terra are so crude in thought that, in the opinion of these more enlightened civilizations, it is a wonder humanity can understand anything at all. Humans are beings of short reach. Give them void ships, change their shape by gene forge and augmetic, provide them with weapons of sufficient power to break a star, and the children of old Earth are still but apes removed from the savannah. And just as an ape's mind cannot hold an ocean, and the notion of a whole world is inexplicable to it, so a man's mind cannot hold the void, and the layered infinities of the warp are beyond him entirely. The Imperium claims a million worlds as its own. It is an empire spread gossamer thin across the run of stars, its worlds so far removed from one another that it requires the bloody effort of countless men and women to sustain. In the grand flow of history, the Imperium is the greatest galactic empire of its day. To the people who populate it, it is the most powerful ever to have existed. However, to the uncaring universe, it is nothing, the latest in a line of such realms that stretches back to the days of the first thinking beings, when the stars were young and the warp was calm, and horror had yet to uncoil its tendrils into the material realm. There are philosophers that argue war is man's natural state, and to the inhabitants of this era of blood, it is a proven hypothesis. War is everywhere. Peace is the dream of a silent emperor, broken by his treacherous sons. Those sons continued to fight. Over the green gas giant of Thessala, two great battle fleets engaged. Titanic energies snapped and blinked in the eternal night of space. The total efforts of star systems went into the construction of these fleets. Neither was free of the taint of blood, not in their construction, for tens of thousands of lives had been expended in their making, nor in their usage. The resources of planets had been poured entire into the forging of their frames, and the secrets of ancient sciences plundered to bring them to murderous life. Both had been responsible for the levelling of civilizations. The fleets differed in only two regards. First was in their appearance. One was a gaudy assault on the senses, the other, a motley collection of sober liveries. The second and more fundamental difference was in their allegiance. The sober fleet fought for the continuation of humanity's great stellar empire. The gaudy one was dedicated to its extinction. The battle fleets pursued each other in a slow dance that broke through Thessala's rings, hundreds of vessels ploughing gaps through the dust that would take centuries to close. The voiceless lightning of their guns filled the skies of Thessala's inhabited moons. The lives of millions below depended on the outcome of the battle, but the consequences would ripple much further. At the center of this iron storm, there was no calm, no eye in which respite might be found. Instead, there was a pair of leviathans, the Ultramarine's battle barge, Gauntlet of Power, and the Emperor's children battleship, Pride of the Emperor. Two vessels, forged in a common cause, but now implacable enemies, locked together in mortal combat only 30 kilometers apart. No distance at all in Void War. Each was the flagship of a Primarch, genetically engineered demigods crafted by the Emperor of Mankind. Aboard the Gauntlet of Power stood Rabute Gilliman, the foundling of Ultramar, the Avenging Sun. The Pride of the Emperor was home to Fulgrim, the traitor, the fallen exemplar, the blighted phoenix. Once covered in his Emperor's blessings, Fulgrim had followed the arch-traitor Horus and pledged his allegiance to ancient dark gods, becoming the herald of perversity. In fighting for their father, both Primarchs were made fathers themselves, though not of princes or strong daughters. Through the application of arcane science, they were the sires of two of the Space Marine Legions, mankind's greatest warriors. The Space Marines were lords of the galaxy, designed to reunite the human race and shepherd it to a glorious future. Instead, they had failed and turned upon one another, and their war had nearly destroyed the Imperium. Such fury a battle fleet can unleash. It can cow a world without a shot. It can extinguish the life of a species. Battlefleets are the tools of tyrants, whomever they fight for. Whether their admirals espouse salvation or damnation matters not to the execution of their purpose. Death follows in their wake. To those participating, a Void War seems a terrifying, roiling chaos of violence, but it is the pinnacle of mankind's destructive ingenuity, a whirl of gigantic explosions where lives are snuffed out by the hundred. In such combat, a single man is nothing. He is but part of the machine of the ship he serves, as essential or otherwise as a steel cog or an indicator lumen. He can do nothing but work his appointed task and pray his life will not end, or, if it must end, that it does so in painless disintegration. A single crewman's task dominates everything, even his fear of death. There is no escape from service. War, and his part in it, are the totality of his existence. Yet, what is a Void War to the timeless deeps of the blackness that envelops all these footling motes of light that sentient creatures battle so earnestly over? A Void War is twinkles in the distance. It is silence. It is infinitesimals of matter sparking and dying, scintillas of metal and flesh consumed by transient fires. The detonation of a battleship kilometers long is insignificant to a cosmos where the death of a sun atomizes worlds. On a galactic scale, the loss of a warship and 10,000 lives is a nugatory flash outshone by the billion-year candles of the stars. The inverse is true to a single man. His life is all that matters, for one life is all a man has, and he fears to lose it. Yet he must blindly serve in terror. The universe gives meager gifts, and it does not care how they are spent. Over Thessala, mankind fought in a civil war already centuries old. The Emperor of Mankind, a human with the power of a god, had tried and failed to unite humanity's scattered worlds so that the species might survive the supernatural threat of chaos. His sons, the Primarchs, godlike beings he had created to complete this task, had themselves been corrupted, and half had turned against him. The Horus Heresy, that war was called. It had ended the Emperor's dream. The heresy was part of a war that had continued for eons, and would continue for eons still. To the beings of this galaxy, the war was everything. To the blank gaze of time, it was nothing. And yet, For all humanity's seeming inconsequence, the children of its greatest son held the fates of two realities in their careless grasp. Rabute Gilliman remained loyal to Terra. His ship was sternly decorated in gold, so much so that it rivaled that of Fulgrim's vessel in ornamentation. But whereas the gauntlet of power was ornate, the pride of the Emperor appeared vulgar. Its decoration had been applied with abandon. Everything that could be adorned had been adorned. Back when the two ships had fought side by side, its extravagance had not been to the taste of the Ultramarines, who were born of more solemn worlds. Now it was an affront to decency, added to and added to again, until tawdry obscured all trace of art. Neglect went hand in hand with this ostentation, and it made the pride of the Emperor appear ugly. It was a decayed relic from a bygone age, like a theatre from a decadent century left to rot in the rain. However, the pride of the Emperor's ability to mete out destruction remained undiminished. At point-blank range, it traded punishing blows with the gauntlet of power as the ships passed slowly alongside each other. Huge cannons flared, exchanging projectiles the size of transit containers. The space between became a deadly thicket of lance beams and laser light. Void shields blurred and sparked with the dissipation of mighty energies. Multi-hued lightning silenced communications and burst subsystems with their feedback for thousands of miles around. Weaponry capable of leveling cities blinked and flashed on both sides. Around these metal behemoths, dozens of other ships struggled in cosmic silence, some approaching the size and power of the flagships in their own right. Without exception, those on Fulgrim's side were the damned ships of the Emperor's children. Though Fulgrim had lost his war and his humanity, his legion yet held some cohesion. On Gilliman's side fought half a dozen successor chapters of the proud 13th Legion, the Ultramarines. Dissolution had been the price of faithfulness for the Legion of Ultramar, and though there were strengths in the smaller formations Gilliman had forced upon the Space Marines after the Great Heresy War, there were weaknesses also. For all their Primarch's famed strategical genius, the Loyalists had been outmaneuvered and caught. Their pursuit of the fallen Primarch had become a fight for survival. Three fleet elements of Emperor's children had pinned the Loyalists into place above Thessala. Fulgrim had turned his flight from Zolko into a devastating trap. Once, Rabute Gilliman would not have made such an error. Perhaps the dire situation over the emerald skies of Thessala was simple misfortune, and Fulgrim was no ordinary opponent after all. Should Gilliman fail, history would surely be forgiving, if there were any good men left to write it. Or perhaps the truth was that rage had clouded the avenging son's judgment. Perhaps, some dared whisper, Rabute Gilliman had allowed his desire for revenge to overtake his reason. Rabute Gilliman was stretched. Although several other Primarchs still stood as champions of humanity, the wounded Imperium looked to Gilliman to save it. Every man has a limit, demigod or peasant, and Gilliman's burden was the heaviest of all. He was the savior of humanity. The pride of the Emperor heeled over, bringing its portside weapons batteries into better firing arcs. In response, the gauntlet of power intensified its barrage, and the void shield covering the pride of the Emperor's ventral towers winked out. Explosions bloomed suddenly across hull plating encrusted with gold and filth. An opening had been made. On board the gauntlet of power, 100 of Ultramar's finest warriors waited on teleport blocks, surrounded by buzzing machinery. They comprised 50 of the first company and 50 of the second, all garbed in the deep blue of the Ultramarines chapter. The white helmets of the first company's veteran space marines, recessed under the cowls of Terminator armor, looked out at hundreds of tech adepts and mortal crewmen, laboring to prepare the Ultramarines' way through the warp. The space marines of the second company were in standard power armor and were being equipped with tall breaching shields by arming servitors. Their battle plate lacked the sheer thickness of Terminator armor, and the shields, though bulky, would increase their survivability in the close-quarter fighting of the coming boarding. Ammunition trains rumbled across the deck on plasteel wheels. Smartly uniformed Ultramarines chapter menials handed out munitions to their masters, while the enhanced warriors performed last-minute armor checks on themselves and their brothers. Chaplains strode from platform to platform, hearing oaths and affixing papers to armor with wax that hissed as they were impressed with sacred iron seals. Whether human or transhuman, every member of the chapter worked with perfect efficiency. Even so, as invested as they were in their preparations, all of them had half an eye on the grand archway leading onto the deck. The ship shook violently. Alarms blared. Lumens spat sparks and went dark. A section of gantry clanged down from the tangle of struts and pipes that clogged the ceiling high above. The crew continued upon its business with unhurried purpose. Orders were given to reroute power. Emergency teams of armored voidsmen and specialized servitors began clearing the wreckage. All was restored to order. Such calm made it easy to forget the punishing fire the ship was under. But there was no doubt that they were losing. This was not how the battle was supposed to have gone. From voxmeters studded into the columns and walls, a clipped voice sounded. "Shields down on the pride of the Emperor! Prepare for assault!" The words were swallowed by the clatter of preparation and tumult of war beating at the ship. They were not repeated, for the superior hearing of the Space Marines caught them all. A clarion followed shortly, sharp and loud enough to be heard by mortal and transhuman alike. The servants of Ultramar stopped what they were doing and stood to attention. A towering figure, clad in the famous Armor of Reason, strode through the archway. On his left hand, he wore the Hand of Dominion. Belted at his waist was the Gladius Incandor. The bearer of these weapons was taller by far than the Invictaris suzerain guard escorting him. He exuded a power and purpose that halted the breath of mortals in their throats.
"First Captain Andros, Second Captain Thiel, are your companies ready?"
the giant called. The two captains crossed the floor to meet their lord. Second Captain Thiel was helmetless in power armor heavy with honors, while First Captain Andros was completely enclosed in a hulking suit of Terminator battle plate. They saluted their father the Ultramarian way, one fist across their chests, the old symbol of unity.
"My Lord Gilliman, your veterans await your command,"
said Andros, his voice ringing from the voxmeter set below his helm.
"We stand prepared, my Primarch,"
said Aeonid Thiel. His voice, rich and soft, was unmoderated by machinery. It was not so very long after the heresy, and Thiel was still young for a space marine, though his face was lined with cares. Gilliman looked down upon his captains resolutely. The Primarch overtopped even Andros in his massive Terminator armor. He was a living god, humanity's might, captured and molded as flesh. Thiel gazed back, seemingly unable to take his eyes from the face of his genesire. Thiel was a good warrior, tested in battle many times, unafraid to voice his mind and modest enough to hide the love he had for his lord, but it shone in his face like a light.
"Such devotion they bear me," thought Gilliman, "even as I fail them."
There were so few of his original legion left alive, and their replacements were born of a different, less certain era. Thiel's regard was tempered by long friendship, and he had never lost his rebellious streak. The younger Space Marines were another matter. Gilliman remembered when his warriors had been less reverent. They had been better times.
"We depart immediately,"
he said, his voice uncompromising.
"The traitor will not escape again. The warriors of six chapters stand ready to aid us. We shall not fail. To your stations. Prepare for mass teleport."
"My lord, we are prepared,"
said Andros carefully.
"But the enemy will outnumber us greatly. I am concerned for our chances of success. What is the practical action, should resistance prove overwhelming? It is Second Captain Thiel's and my opinion that you should remain here. We shall occupy the enemy while the Gauntlet of Power withdraws. We cannot..."
The Avenging Sun cut Andros dead with a look.
"Too much blood has been shed on my behalf. I will not shy from this fight,"
Gilliman said, and his tone would brook no disagreement.
There can be no retreat until the pride of the Emperor is crippled. I must face my brother and occupy him while these tasks are done. And if I must fight him, I will kill him, or I will die in the attempt. I cannot let him escape unpunished again. My sons, he added, his voice softening, it is the only way to escape this trap.
Andros bowed his helmeted head. Thiel paused a moment, uncertain, before doing the same. Sure of their agreement, Gilliman took his own helm from a grav platform pushed by two mortal men. He mounted the teleport platform, stepping directly onto it with no need of the steps that led from the deck, and turned to address his sons.
Now, my warriors, let us show my brother the consequences of turning upon the Imperium of Terror. We march from a crag,
they bellowed, and their combined voices were enough to drown out the thunder of battle. Gilliman's Invictus Suzerain Guard followed him onto the teleport pad. They formed a protective ring around him, their shields and power axes held up in a shield wall in preparation for teleportation directly into the jaws of battle. To those around him, Gilliman was an infallible leader, his abilities supernatural. Even to the rational Ultramarines, who believed the Emperor of Mankind to be a man and not a god, and likewise his Primarch's sons, a sense of near-religious awe had crept into their attitude towards him. It had only become more pronounced since the last days of the heresy. But Rabute Gilliman was not infallible. He knew this course of action to be fraught with risk. Andros had been right to raise the possibility of defeat. The Primarch only wished he could praise his son for his insight, rather than dismissing his concerns. His campaign against the Emperor's children had, to all purposes, failed. Fulgrim had the initiative. Gilliman's choices had been made for him. The pieces were set on the board. There was only one option. They had to withdraw. Currently, withdrawal was impossible. If the gauntlet of power broke off from the fight, then the pride of the Emperor would inflict massive damage upon the battle barge. Fulgrim would then most likely attempt a boarding assault of his own once their defences were shattered. Gilliman could not allow his brother to do that at a time of his choosing. The Primarch's powerful mind had examined all possibilities. His own strategic treatises would have him retreat quickly, forming a fighting rearguard so that he might withdraw those of his ships that he could, minimising the damage to his flagship by sacrificing many of his others. Expending the lives of other men to save his own was not to Gilliman's liking, especially when he saw a slim chance for true victory. He could not ignore this opportunity to slay his treacherous sibling. Gilliman had come to the conclusion that by defying his own tactical orthodoxies, he might surprise Fulgrim. It was a slender chance. Fulgrim might well have dropped his ship's shields on purpose, a mocking reenactment of Horus's last gambit to lure the Emperor aboard his ship at the end of the Siege of Terror. Gilliman had his own plans. Several boarding forces with independent but mutually supportive objectives would teleport in simultaneously with his own force. Teams, drawn from multiple chapters, were tasked to head for the Engenarium, the command deck, the Navigatorium, the magazine, the subsidiary command deck, and the main gunnery control. If only half of his strike teams were successful, they had a good chance of crippling the pride of the Emperor from within. His warriors had orders to withdraw immediately once their objectives had been achieved. He would make sure as many survived as possible. He would not let his sons pay the price for his mistakes. He had to settle the reckoning for his own errors. Gilliman could not deny he had been hooked and played like a fish. All he could do was struggle free and bite the one who had snared him.
Make ready! We go to war! He called.
At his signal, the machines of the teleport deck hummed into life. Giant reaction columns crackled with immense power, feeding the focusing arrays that would tear open the veil between real space and the warp. They glowed with painful light. As they shone brighter, curls of materializing corpuscent were leached from initiation prongs and fed into containment flasks, where it twisted as if alive.
So many of my brothers are dead, fallen to chaos, or lost, thought Gilliman. We assumed we were immortal. We are not. My time must come. But not today. Not at the hands of Fulgrim.
The arcane machineries of teleportation whooped and hummed, the deck vibrating with their activity. The tumult built to a climax. A booming crack and flash of actinic light whited out the teleport deck. Suppressant vapors gushed from wide-mouthed tubes in anticipation of fires from overstressed machinery. Human armsmen raised their shotguns in case of warp breach and demonic incursion. None came. Signal strobes blinked. Red. 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 Then blue.
Teleport success! Teleport success! Droned a mechanical voice.
The lumens came back on. Corpuscent flasks emptied to the sounds of half-formed screams. Atmospheric vents drew smoke away, revealing empty pads. Adepts consulted vidscreens and paper cogitator strips, and relief crossed their faces at the readouts. Rabute Gilliman and his warriors were aboard the Pride of the Emperor.